And so I invite you, as we begin our meditation experience, to just begin a rhythmic pattern of breathing, placing our awareness at our heart space, and simply feeling the sensation of the breath as it moves in and out. And as we begin to settle into this moment, let us bring into our awareness someone or something that we appreciate. It could be a family member, a friend, a life partner, a cherished child, a beloved pet, or even a fond memory. Whatever carries with it the felt sense of appreciation, gratitude, love, let us bring that into our awareness now, and allowing that awareness to be carried within our breath, and then feeling those feelings of appreciation begin to rise up within us, filling this sanctuary with the felt, coherent experience of heart-centered appreciation. And it is within this field that we now open our hearts, giving ourselves to a greater expression of love's intent that seeks to fulfill itself through each one of us. And so in our outer awareness, it is difficult for us to always feel or see love's intent. But as we set aside the cares of this world and simply open to the presence of love, the very depth of our beingness, opening to that love, inviting that love to do its perfect work, recognizing that love is our purpose, is our presence, is our peace, is our abundance. And in whatever way love can do its perfect work in our lives, in the lives of those who are near and dear to us, whether it be for comfort or for peace or for healing or for reckoning or for integration or for whatever serves the greater purpose of moving us into the sure and certain awareness of who and what we are as love. And so let us take this awareness of love as our essence, as the presence, as our life, into the silence. Into the silence. Breathe in and release. We release ourselves now to the care and keeping of Spirit, knowing that God's love, the love that is our life, carries us into a greater expression of who and what we come here to be. And for love's perfect work, we are grateful. Thank you, God. So it is.
I send my love over the mountains. I send my love over the sea. I send my love into the heavens and in.
hands.
I send my love over the sea. I send my love into the heavens, and it returns to me.
Thank you. How beautiful. That is one of my favorite songs in the whole world, and I appreciate being blessed by that this morning. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Yes, it's good to be back. It's good to be back. I have been gone for a month. I don't know if you noticed, but yes, Gary noticed. Gary noticed. Yeah. And I have missed you tremendously. It's wonderful to be back. And every time this was a cross-country tour, I have to tell you, by the time I got from here to Kansas City to Buffalo to Hamilton to Halifax to Ottawa to Chalk River to back to Hamilton and back here, every time I left a place, I was saying goodbye to loved ones and looking forward to seeing more loved ones. And so it's been a tender trip for me. But I'm back. I'm happy to be back. And I wrote this talk when I was in Canada. So I've been immersed in this stuff even while not being here. And for the past several weeks, we've been talking about evolutionary transformation and looking at the cultural paradigm shifts that have happened throughout history and through the framework and the colors of spiral dynamics. And as we've explored each of these worldviews, we have found how it correlates with our own individual developmental stages of growth. My talk title this morning is "What Color is Your God?" Because we are going to be widening our focus this morning and seeing that cultural evolution isn't the only game in town. It isn't the only paradigm shift that's happening. That in fact, throughout history, as each of these cultural evolutionary shifts have happened, so has our conceptualization of the divine, you see. And so to recap, we'll just go through this again. We began with the beige prehistoric era 250,000 years ago, where survival was the name of the game. And we related that to the helpless years of infancy, where our very survival rested solely on our caregivers. The purple tribal age that followed that 50,000 years ago is linked to the magical toddler years, where we are finding our place in the family, we're finding our tribe. Red feudalism, the building of empires, rebellious personal power, rose up 10,000 years ago, and we compared that to the forming of the ego during our preschool years. And then 5,000 years ago, the blue authoritarian rule of law time period followed the mayhem, the lawlessness of red, and blue correlates with our school age years, where we learn to corral that ego. We don the mask of social acceptability. We conform to societal rules. And then the orange, rational, mechanistic, scientific, corporate worldview began around 300 years ago with the Industrial Revolution. And developmentally, we're talking about those adolescent years when critical thinking starts to emerge, where we start to question those previously held views that we have learned throughout our lives. We start to question what we've been told. And then the final worldview in what's known as first tier is green, egalitarian green, which showed up about 150 years ago. And this correlates with a time in our development and growth when we start to look within, we start to look for meaning in our lives. We start to look at the heart and do the work within ourselves. And so if you have not heard any of the talks that delve deeper into each one of these time periods, or you'd like a review of any of them, you can find them all on our website. So there's a natural tension between these different worldviews in first tier. And communication between them is difficult. One of the signs of first tier thinking is an inability to understand the view of the worldview that we are evolving into, right? We just don't kind of get it. And thinking that the worldview we've just left behind, that those folks are just too dumb to get it. See that? That's a sure sign we're in first tier thinking. And the belief that the worldview that we currently are immersed in is the best one, or the only one, is our biggest deterrent and biggest roadblock from evolving beyond it. Do you see that? This is what gets in our way about moving forward. Nonetheless, we do move forward. You'll notice that the time between these evolutionary changes is becoming exponentially shorter. And I believe we are on the cusp of a major paradigm shift into second tier, because the signs are all around us. Have you noticed this? And one way of thinking of a distinction between first and second tier is that when we're immersed in first tier thinking, we are sourcing our well-being outside of ourselves. We're sourcing our discomfort outside of ourselves as well. Whereas second tier, we start to source both of those within ourselves. So the locus of control shifts from outer to inner, and that is a good thing, because the kinds of events and situations that are happening in the outer world right now are very challenging. Have you noticed? We're living in interesting times, aren't we? The nightly news offers up a pretty steady stream of reports that paint a rather bleak picture of global domestic violence, climate-related disasters, corruption, addiction, poverty, discord, abuse. And even taking into account the sensationalism around what bleeds leads kind of reporting, we can't ignore the march that we seem to be on towards a perilous future. And if our well-being and worth is being sourced outside of ourselves with what's happening in the outer, then first-tier consciousness will not help us to heal this. Do you see it? It's so exciting. We need something greater, which is what is arising, because this is the good news. In the midst of this chaotic, polarized, social, political, cultural climate, there's a ray of hope. Do you want to hear what it is?
Yes.
Lean in. A positive redeeming factor inherent within this current divisiveness appears to be a mobilization of a force for positive change, an awakening, if you will. And I believe this arising is connected to a powerful, collective, evolutionary impulse that transcends religion, that transcends politics, that transcends racial issues, that transcends economic polarities. And it will help us in this leap to second tier. This impulse links us together. Do you see it? We become united in our common humanity. And it offers all of us a very strong opportunity to dig deep within ourselves and to find these spiritual gifts that may be laying dormant, that are ready to be expressed. They're ready to be developed and expressed. There's even a name for the stimulus of the times we live in. It's called a cataclysmic evolutionary catalyst. I love that term. So what if we're poised to make a paradigm shift in our cultural development? And imagine if our spiritual principles could help with the emergence of a kinder, more compassionate world. If so, how might we be a part of bringing that forth? What actions can we take that will support the emergence of something new that will help to get us beyond the last vestiges of an ailing paradigm? Well, the Jungian scholar and educator Alice O. Howell wrote this. She says, "I taught history, and had ample occasion to notice a curious phenomenon again and again at crucial times when so-called paradigm shifts in collective consciousness had been at hand. A cluster of extraordinary people have been born in the same generation, in the same culture. And she goes on to describe their interaction. Often, she says, they have managed to meet, to cross-fertilize ideas and talents in various fields of endeavor, art, philosophy, literature, science, music, drama, so forth. And their efforts have radiated out, slowly and subtly transforming their society with a new perception and expression of a constant and underlying truth. Now, what if her observation is correct, accurate, and you're one of those extraordinary people? Who's ready to step into that? Anybody? Okay. I see one or two hands. And as we explore the imminent change and our role in its actualization, I want to bring into the arena this morning two very important dynamics that will be relevant for us in our transformative process. The first is the changing role of spirituality. And the second is the evolution of the image of God. You see, in addition to cultural development throughout the spiral, our concept of God has evolved along with humanity. You know that old joke, humanity was made in God's image and we've been returning the favor ever since. In fact, I read this quote from Reverend Mark Sandlin, a Presbyterian minister, who said, "You can safely say that you've created God in your own image when it turns out God hates all the same people you do." So throughout time, we have had a human image of God that has evolved as we have. And to explore this a little bit, the purple tribal gods are the ones that need appeasing, if you remember. The volcano erupts, so what do? Right, toss somebody in. This is magical spirits, rain dances, sacrifice, the magical thinking, the thunder gods are angry, trickster gods, sacrifice. And when Gary and I visited the Mexican Mayan ruins in Chichen Itza, our tour guide showed us what appeared to be a playing field with two very high hoops, one on either side of the field. This is one of them right there. And the custom at that time was to have the world's first basketball game, as he called it. The object of the game was that your team needed to get the ball through the hoop as many times as you could. Now, the difference with the rules of this game, though, was that the captain of the winning team had the honor of having his head chopped off and displayed in a stick on the ground. And the players spent their whole lives preparing for this honor. See, this very purple thinking here. Now, of course, we didn't fare too much better with the red power gods either. You know, in the Hebrew scriptures, God was off smiting Philistines, drowning everybody on earth for misbehavior, including all the animals. It's like we're talking the warrior god here. Greek and Roman gods, they were a very testy bunch. Some pretty nasty tempers, easily bruised egos, Zeus and his thunderbolts, lightning bolts, and the Norse gods were definitely warrior gods. And all of this dangerously unpredictable and capricious behavior of the gods brought about the need for a law and order god. You see? And we talked earlier in this series about the Blue Axial Age, which was in this time period between 8,000 and 3,000 BCE, that brought order to spiritual practice in many different countries and regions. Persia, India, China, Greece, the Middle East, all had philosophers and spiritual leaders rise up in this time period as red turned to blue. So the Buddha, Jeremiah, Lao Tzu, Plato, Socrates, Elijah, they were all born during this time. The Eightfold Path in Buddhism, the philosophical guide of the Tao Te Ching, the foundations of Western philosophy in Greece, Hebrew prophetic guidance. This was a time to bring order to the spiritual world. Now, the law and order God says, follow these rules and you'll get to heaven. Obey God, you'll be blessed. Disobey God, you'll be, anybody know? Cursed. Yes. Only those who believe as we do are the chosen ones, and they'll be rewarded. And you may have noticed that the red and blue gods are alive and well in many traditional fundamentalist faiths today. We see ample evidence of their clashing. Now, along comes rational scientific thought in orange, and how might someone centered in that worldview perceive God? Well, this is where practical spirituality comes into play. Change your thinking, change your life. Yes, that's very orange. You can be successful. It's the prosperity God of abundance. Prove me now, God. Because here's what happens during this time. It's questioning all those blue rules and regulations. Do you see? Exploring new paths, not buying into what we may have taken on from childhood. Like, wait a minute. She turned into a pillar of salt. Now explain to me how that happened. See, we start to question everything in this time period. Using science to study and question. Looking at the metaphysics instead of the literalism of blue. And then the green god of love rises up from the need for more heart, which is lacking in orange. We're all interconnected. There's only one power, one presence. That divine power and presence is love. Is this familiar to anyone? Yes? You know, Jesus has a very green message. And if we have a blue god that says only those who believe as we do are going to heaven, and we're listening to a green message from Jesus who says all is love, do you see how we can be at odds with what we believe? And in that case, we might find our way to an alternative way of practicing spirituality. Many of us got here through that. So our big question at this point becomes, what does second-tier consciousness look like? How can our spiritual practices align with its emergence? What does an integral second-tier God look like? And is there a paradigm change on the horizon for that as well? But as Richard Rohr points out, normally we find it very difficult to let, there's second-tier. But as Richard Rohr points out, normally we find it very difficult to let God be greater than our culture, our immediate needs, our projections. So here's the thing. As we evolve, new vistas open up for us, do you see, in our spiritual journey. That's the exciting news. Is anybody else as excited about this as me? On this trip, I was writing this talk. My grandsons were, Nana, what are you doing? I'm excited. Now, as I've shared in the past, every few centuries, religious wisdom traditions go through major transformation. At the first 500-year mark of Christianity, the monastic tradition was born, which mirrored the feudal system at the time. 500 years later, the Catholic and Eastern Orthodox churches split, and the Pope rose up, which mirrored the monarchies that were now part of the governance during that era. The next 500-year increment brought the Spanish Inquisition, and along with that, the Great Reformation, with a more democratic method of choosing leadership. And you can find these same 500-year changes in Judaism, if you keep going back, with the Babylonian captivity, the Davidic dynasty. There's all kinds of changes that happen in that time period. Islam has its changes with the rise of Sufism, the Ottoman Empire, Baha'i. Even Buddhism has these three great turnings in its history. And the point of all this, we are poised for another shift. We're at another 500-year mark here. And I believe that the new spirituality on our doorstep will be part of ushering in a new paradigm of living. The conjecture is that it may be even called another great turning, the fourth great turning. And if you remember that these shifts typically mirror the cultural worldview at the time, this tells me that as we move into second-tier consciousness, the spiritual work that we must do to bring forth its emergence needs to be an example of second-tier practice. Now, to me, second-tier is about this. It's about being the change, experiencing the presence of God and expressing it. It's about localizing spirit. Do you see? Localizing spirit. It's about actualizing our divine potential. Right where we are. Living the truth of interconnection. Bringing divine love into the world. Expressing the authentic self. Being source in action. And through that, midwifing the birth of this new evolving paradigm, bringing ourselves into alignment with this deeper dimension of interbeing, the field of infinite possibility. And if we look at God, the three faces of God, there's presence experiencing the I am. There's principle, the unified field, recognizing the power. And there's personhood, seeing God in every single pair of eyes. That's the work. And it takes all hands on deck. Because when we talk about evolving, we're really talking about co-evolving. Do you know? And as we travel this co-evolutionary path, it's necessary for us to step out of the story of separation and into the reality of interbeing, oneness, interdependence, which undergirds this integral, holistic, second-tier worldview that we're evolving toward. So it's living the truth that we know. I mean, every Sunday, what do we say? There's one presence, one power. It is time for us to start living that truth. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
So what color is your God? And are you ready for the birth of a new awareness? Correct response is yes. Are you ready to let this evolutionary cataclysmic catalyst help you evolve into the next grander vision of who you are, your true self?
Yes.
I love that. Our job is to help it emerge by making it welcome, not by making it happen. Make it welcome. So we have reviewed the evolutionary changes throughout history, from instinctual to magical to warrior to rule of law to scientific to humanistic, and we have seen we're poised for the next one. We have seen that the concept of God has evolved along with humanity and that the next birth in our awareness is part of the shift to a new paradigm, and we've seen that the spiritual path is due to take a twist in the journey. And the convergence of these three elements can guide us in unveiling what is ours to do in order to make that shift. Ken Wilber sheds a little bit of light on this for us. Any Ken Wilber fans here? He's a modern-day philosopher. I love him. Who points out something very important for us to see. The developmental process that we've been exploring throughout this series is one that psychologists and social scientists have explored forever, have studied in depth. And there are many lines of development that we didn't even touch on in this series. Cognitive, emotional, faith, social development, multiple intelligences, all that. There's endless research going on in this field, and we can think of this as the study of growing up. Growing up. Then the wisdom traditions have been focusing on waking up, teaching meditation practices designed to help us to awaken to our deeper self. And these two avenues, growing up, waking up, have never been combined in the past. Do you see? No wisdom traditions have worked on the growing up part of it. with the developmental stages. No developmental researchers have focused on the waking up process. The closest we can find is Maslow's hierarchy of needs that peaks at self-actualization, which is really about demonstrating the full reach of our human potential. But no one has crossed the stream, so to speak. You see? Until now, yes. But what if that's the work of the new spirituality? What if that is what can help us move into second tier? Are you ready for that work?
Yes.
Because part of the growing up avenue of evolution entails cleaning up. Cleaning up our past, doing the work, you know what I'm talking about. And healing those places from our own past that are still, we're still dragging with us into the present. When we have done that work, we can step into this with open hearts and open minds and a clear understanding. Isn't that cool? Yeah. Really? I'm sorry to be so excited, but I am. So the next talk of this series will take us deeper into exploring what awaits us in second tier and how we go about midwifing its emergence. So stay tuned for that one. It's coming up. And again, it's so good to be back. God bless.
Thank you, Jane. Unity stands for peace in the presence of conflict, for love in the presence of hatred, for forgiveness in the presence of injury. Unity honors the many names for God, the many paths to God, for we know that there is only one power, one presence, one life. So whoever you are and wherever you are on your journey of transformation, you are welcome here. We would especially like to welcome anyone who is here for the first time.